Since we have our meetings on Wednesday nights for years and years, one Wednesday night a year is dedicated to Thanksgiving, because it's always on Thanksgiving Eve. So that's the topic for tonight's talk. It also was the topic for the contemplation that preceded this talk. As I was thinking about doing this, I started to make certain kinds of procedural connections, practice connections. So the trajectory of my explanation involves how a diligent practice of mindfulness breathing meditation releases the mind into a feeling of joy, the mind and the body. And that joy can manifest as gratitude and can also manifest as generosity. So I want to talk about those capacities from a Buddhist perspective and from a kind of neuropsych perspective. I thought about really diving deep into which particular parts of the brain are involved, very geeky thing. I decided that that would take up too much time, because what I would like to do is for you folks who are here and via Zoom or in person to reflect on your experience during the guided meditation, or alternatively, how has your practice, such as it's been, however long you've been doing it, how has it supported your ability to be grateful, to be generous, to actually enjoy what you're doing, not just with meditating, but going through the day? So I want that opportunity to be present. So I decided to just kind of skim through the what goes on in the brain. What is meditative joy? The Pali word for that is piti, PITI. How does mindfulness training create the experience of joy? It's one of the seven awakening factors. We usually regard joy as something that requires something external. We can enjoy a work of art or something on television. And that's, I'm not discounting that at all. From a Buddhist perspective, joy as an awakening factor represents a kind of buoyant, interested, enthusiastic engagement with the flow of subjective experience. It's just something interesting about it. I've said this many times about myself that, the only thing that I have had through the whole course of my life is my subjectivity. I really want to understand that. I really want to make the most of it while I got a body, right? And I'm grateful for the opportunity. So that's my understanding of joy. There's a quality of what's going to happen next, what's going to happen next. So in this context, joy is an inside job. It emerges. In psychological terms, it's called an internal locus of control. You can bring joy to whatever happens. Whatever happens doesn't bring joy to you. So I mentioned that it's an awakening factor. The other factors actually are what cultivate or nurture joy and bring it into balance. First awakening factor is mindfulness, just being presently aware, not being absent-minded. Second awakening factor is investigation of mental phenomena. Investigation basically means being curious. What's happening now? What's going on right now? Now, when you bring your attention to focus on the breath, aiming and sustaining, that is that kind of curiosity. That matures into aiming and sustaining matures into investigation of mental phenomena, along with mindfulness. The third awakening factor is energy. Energy in this context basically means that which is vitalizing your flow of experience. I mean, we are energy transforming creatures, taking fuel, food, oxygen, travels into the body, metabolizes it, makes the muscles work, and so forth, but it also flows through the mind, through the brain. And flows through these different channels. And when it's flowing through channels that are dysfunctional, irrational, a distortion of what's really in one's best interest, I consider that to be an energy dump. So we want to renounce that. When, during the guided meditation, I talked about imagining intention to be like a tuner. And it can tune into any number of channels in your subjective flow of experience. And tune into the chatter. It's called the default mode network. I call it the selfing story, right? So it keeps churning through that. A lot of energy goes through that. Alternatively, when one's attention is on something that is not, doesn't have that kind of quality of drivenness, the energy is freed up. Sensation breathing is one of those ways to do that. So the mind gets quieter and more peaceful in its flow. And the energy that's bound up in the hindrances is released, and that released energy gets aligned with investigation and mindfulness, and joy is experienced. Right? Enthusiastic interest. Whether what's happening is pleasant or unpleasant, it's really interesting to pay attention. The famous psychiatrist Fritz Perls said that, boredom is the inability to pay attention. I think that stayed with me when I first read that decades ago. So, along with that joy, the awakening factor, comes tranquility. During the guided meditation that preceded this, I invited people to contemplate quietness in the mind. And one of the things I mentioned to clarify that is, there might be this chatter going on in the mind. One part of the brain is channeling that energy. Most of the energy available is going into that channel. When you shift away from that, it's not as much energy going to that channel. Instead, it's going to peacefulness, quietness in the mind. It's already there. Just a question of tuning into it, right? So that's what we're doing. So, along with the joy comes tranquility, quiet mind. As I'm saying this, I'm remembering a famous, to me anyway, quote from Ajahn Chah, a famous, well-respected Thai master. He asked his disciples, "Have you ever seen a quiet river?" Yes. We have, Master. Have you ever seen a moving river? Yes, we have, Master. Have you ever seen a quiet moving river? That's what we're talking about here. Joy and tranquility. It's a quietly moving flow of awareness. That's joyful, right? And along with that, the mind's function, another one of the awakening factors, is concentration or unification. Unification of what? Of these awakening factors. They're all cooperating effectively. And that brings balance, which is the seventh awakening factor, equanimity. There's not too much energy, too much tranquility. There's not too much rigidity of attention, not too much looseness of attention. That's what it is. Okay. So that's what brings joy. How do we relate that to gratitude? Word for gratitude in Pali is katanyu. It's a warm, buoyant experience of interaction with something in the environment. So it's kind of reciprocal. It might mean the joy of a beautiful piece of music. It might mean the joy when someone gives you something valuable to you. It might be family heirloom, may not be worth anything to anybody else, but has interest for you, right? So gratitude has this capacity. The more we can cultivate open awareness of joy in the context of the awakening factors, all these other things that are integrated and cooperating effectively, then our ability to open to joy amplifies the frequency of feeling gratitude and the vibrancy of it, the vividness of it. Just as I was preparing these notes today, actually, it was while I was walking around with my dog and kind of reflecting on this topic, I just felt so joyful, right? And grateful, kind of on my mind, obviously. But just walking down a street that I've walked down just about every day for years with this dog, traffic, whatever, something about it was like a bounce in my step, right? And I think that's because I meditate a lot, for sure, but also because I was really contemplating, what is this thing we call joy? What is this thing we call gratitude? We're hardwired for empathy. So in that context, we can empathize with the joy of another person who is, something's going well for them. It's called mudita, appreciative joy. It might be that you've given them something. It's generosity, right? It might be that they've had a bit of success. The context of generosity in this context is that there's a quality of joining. It felt really good to be the recipient of someone else's generosity, someone else's patience, their knowledge, their skills, their resources. So, in that kind of attunement, as we're social animals, it feels really good to bring something to another person, be generous, right? It's one of the things I love about teaching. I've been teaching people things since I was a Boy Scout. I just enjoy it, right? And it's generous, but it's not like, oh, I'm going to do this so I can be generous. It's just, no, this is so cool. This is fun. And that brings the generosity and the joy and the gratitude. It all fits together really nicely. So one of the benefits of gratitude and generosity and that kind of interaction, it's pro-social. It builds trust and confidence. It creates more peace in relationships. So when I was doing this, I enlisted ChatGPT as my assistant. I am very well versed in Buddhist doctrine, but what I'm discovering about ChatGPT is that he has a great capacity to kind of summarize, pull it all together in one or a few pages of interesting information. I have to ask the right question. So I asked the question, what is a joy? Here's what it had to say. Now, when I asked it, I said, what are the neural substrates of joy? What goes on in the neural pathways? But like I said, I don't want to get way geeky here. But one of the things that the ChatGPT manifests is these descriptives. It's an energetic uplift without compulsive craving, with a pleasurable whole body affect, a reduction of threat reactivity, an expanded attentional field, sustained concentration, which transitions into tranquility. And yet there's no loss of alertness. So basically, different channels, I mentioned tuning, the self-talk tuner or channel rather, and the mindfulness of breathing channel, and you can tune with your intention. There are parts of the brain that function in such a way that it brings interested attention to an object. The mind engages novelty. And so we can use that skillfully. When I say that, typically the untrained mind is drawn to the novelty of some kind of scrambled nonsense, the selfing story, right? However, we can decide to channel it into a sensation in the body, breath sensation. It does not require a story that is not particularly, that doesn't have any strong feeling one way or the other. So what does that mean? Well, whenever there's a strong feeling, there's adrenaline in the system, right? With the breath, that adrenaline is that energy is not bound up in the storyline, in the reactivity, the contraction, the tension that comes with it. It's freed up. And that's what brings the joy. So it has to do with how you pay attention, how that attention is regulated, the tuner, and associated in terms of joy with what goes on in the body. The more you become mentally relaxed and yet alert, the more the body becomes physically relaxed, yet alert. And the interaction between the two, with the intention to be alert, that's part of the joy. The intention to be alert is an important part of this. So this translates out through the body in terms of adrenaline and hormone that's called oxytocin. associated with being soothed. When a mother holds her infant, both the infant and the mother experience the benefits of oxytocin, right? That happens with breath awareness. It's released into the system. That's part of joy. And that joy is not just in the mind, it's also in the body. Gratitude. With gratitude, there's a kind of a relational component involved. Not only is there some sort of neural pathway that's associated with this internal awareness that I mentioned, there's also a pathway that somehow or other is creating a link or an association with something going on that's not in the body. Right? In this context, basically, somebody's being kind, somebody's being generous, of their time, of their expertise, their resources, whatever. Or just simply part of the benefit of joy is the gratitude. The world's an amazing place. The deeper I get into my practice, the more miraculous life is in my mind. Just a miracle, brilliant miracle. Just thinking about that brings joy. That emerges from your practice, that gratitude. There's, I mentioned earlier, one of the what's called the four divine abidings, the Brahma Viharas, is mudita, appreciative joy or sympathetic joy. It's the ability to enjoy the happiness of others. It's hard not to smile when you see a kid having fun, right? So that kind of appreciative joy, there's a quality of belonging there. Part of the reason why I can enjoy seeing a kid playing is because I have enjoyed playing also, right? So there's that association, like a memory trace that has that warm, positive, affective tone to it. One of the attributes of the Buddhist world is the teachings are offered out of gratitude. I'm kind of alluded to that earlier, didn't I? That I'm so grateful for how my life has been benefited by meditation, and also how much I enjoy teaching, and I have tested out to be verbally gifted, right? I could either be really good at running a game or really good at helping people. Unfortunately, I've decided to choose the latter rather than the former. And I'm grateful for that, right? So you see, there's a link there that has to do with that empathetic bond and the good feeling that comes from it, that exchange. And that's what opens up the door to generosity, which is dana, D-A-N-A, in Buddhism. The opportunity to express gratitude by offering somebody to someone, something to someone that may be of value to her or him. That's part of generosity. But the generosity part, I love feeding my dog. It's generous. I buy her dog food. I enjoy giving her the food, seeing how excited she is. She loves to go for a walk. That's not particularly generous. I love going for a walk too. But you get my gist, right? That there's this deeply felt sense of connection from being generous. So let me see if I've covered all the. In terms of generosity, it's important that the generosity, I mean, it's important to be generous, just on principle. It's pro-social. It's good for our culture for us to be generous with one another. But from a perspective of wanting to have insight, to live more skillfully, it's important to be mindful and investigate how the mind gets hooked into a demand for reciprocity. I'm going to be generous to you, so you better appreciate it, whether you like it or not. Right? I've decided what you want, what's going to make you happy, and you, by golly, better show me how happy you are, or I have every right to be resentful. That's pretty dramatic, right? But you get what I'm saying. It's that we get bound up because we're being generous to someone, and they're required. It has to be transactional, right? Rather than just simply an expression of connection and maybe of compassion. Part of what I just clicked on that important aspect of the application of generosity is compassion. Compassion in terms of being patient, compassion in terms of, feeding someone when they're hungry, so forth and so on. We can do that consciously, but to the extent that we're still hooked by the hindrances, it could easily slip into that need to be appreciated. So that's what I wanted to say about the topic. For the rest of the time, I want to open up the opportunity for people to reflect on the guided meditation if you were part of that, or any questions or comments you may have about those topics, mindfulness, investigation, energy in the form of right effort, joy, how that manifests as gratitude and generosity. So, questions, comments? Steve in the room.
Hi. Yeah, just a small comment maybe. I've noticed since my practice has picked up over the past year and a half that two things in specific. I have a more of a tendency to wake up in the morning, and the first thing, I really appreciate when you say think about what it's like to be in a body. And I'll wake up and I'll have that feeling straight off, where isn't it wonderful to be in an incarnation? Isn't it wonderful to be in a body? And just, I usually go to the fingertips. I always like the fingertips. And
A
I
lot
just,
of nerve endings there.
yeah. I just lay in bed and check that out, and feel gratitude for everything. That starts expanding from there, and that's wonderful. And that's something that didn't really happen like that until I practiced a lot. And another thing is, and I notice this especially in times where there's a lot of stuff going on, there's a lot of stress, where I'll be in sort of a crisis mode, and something will flip. And I'll suddenly feel gratitude for it'll not be the things that I'm burdened with, but rather the things I get to do, and there'll be a flip of sorts. And I'll get sort of a giddy, almost like Christmas morning joy, like Christmas morning when you're a kid, I'll clarify, that just surfaces. And I connect that to the practice
Yes.
very easily. So just two small things that I've noticed in daily life that I think radiate from the practice.
Well, they're small, they're mundane, but they're important. They're important. I've often talked about, everybody describes the last straw that broke the camel's back. Is if the straw was the problem. What about all the other straws? The accumulation of straws. Well, we could flip that. The more you cultivate being presently aware with that curiosity, joy comes from that. It's a training. The straws are adding up so that it's easier and easier to be joyful about more and more trivial things. Right? And when I say trivial, I mean, on the scale of life, they're not that important, like the sound of a bird singing, right? That could be joyful. Be grateful for that. Being grateful not just for the bird, but also grateful for the capacity to be thrilled. That seems so delightful to me. Other questions or comments? Alex.
When you're saying prompting us to just think of a moment to be grateful, one of the main things I was thinking about was this and yourself. I'm extremely grateful for I mean, I only started coming in since like August, but it's been huge what it's done for me for like getting introduced to the meditation practice consistently and stuff. So stuff like this, and then coming back from the retreat, grateful for what they're doing over there and just people that I've met along the way. So definitely want to express gratitude in that regard.
So, as a motivator, I want to invite you to realize the more you practice on a regular basis, whether you're on a retreat or not, the more access you have to the joy. The more you remember, oh, yeah, this is cool. But it will fade as time passes after the retreat. It'll be harder and harder to touch into that kind of experience. That's another motivator to seriously sit and go on retreats. I mean, that's my motivator. I have been doing self-retreats in this building for over 20 years. I mean, talk about gratitude. we bought this property to make this cottage. That's why we bought it. Also, it's a nice neighborhood. But still, I'm so grateful. And it gives me a chance to be generous, right?
Right.
Other questions or comments?
Did not see
Yeah,
any.
sure,
Okay.
Alex.
So it was interesting when you were saying about like the flip side to sometimes like making sure that you ain't caught in that trap of like being generous and expecting something back. I was thinking about the other end of when someone's generous to you and feeling indebted. That like I experienced that a lot and like I don't know, yeah, what do you think about that?
So your experience of gratitude gets interpreted as you owe something.
Right, perhaps. Like sometimes it gets like it's yeah, I mean not always, but
So
it
that might be part of the vibe of the exchange. The other person might be carrying that load with them,
interesting.
right?
Right.
All right, so it is what it is. Your task is to be mindful and notice how that interpretation, that view is kind of stuck. It doesn't have to be that way. Whether the other person is, you appreciate what somebody does, okay, fine. If you don't have the opportunity to be generous with them, be generous with somebody else.
Pay forward.
Pay it forward.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that paying it forward is not because you are duty bound, you owe it.
Right.
It's more because, oh, I felt good when I was the recipient of generosity. I'll feel good when I give it to something to somebody else.
Yeah.
So that's what I meant by it being pro-social. It builds trust in relationships. And when I say trust, whether it's there's a strong bond between you and someone you've known a long time and you both are generous with each other, you could be that with anybody. One of the things that I decided years ago about my marriage, I want to practice loving Paula the way I want to love everybody. And I'm not talking, I'm very romantically attached to her, but in terms of the everyday interactions of living with somebody, the patience and the willingness to work through challenges and so forth, that's part of it. I'm grateful that she and I have that capacity as a couple, right? Other questions or comments?
So I have.
Yeah. Yes. Who's that? Amar?
Yeah. I miss the guided meditation, but I'm so happy that I got to listen to the Dharma talk. I will tell you in my practice that when I play sports, like low intensity sports like golf, or if you will, or high intensity like volleyball, I find that just a little bit of tuning into my breath after a bad shot, and some frustration of hitting a bad shot goes a long way for me. And when I feel that presence, just a conscious in-breath and a conscious out-breath, or maybe just a conscious in-breath, I find like immediately afterwards, I start playing better. I may hit a good shot or I may win a point. And that is my motivator to go back to the breath. But it, I mean, I don't consider myself, like I do consider myself a meditator, but not like, like an hour a day kind of person. But I do it in my tasks, like washing dishes or waiting in traffic, or being mindfulness of music, or being mindfulness of a mantra, mindful of a mantra, or on my breath. But I find that recently in sports, it's just a little awareness turns into like skilled play or something like that.
Sure. Somebody's getting, maybe can help me with this, but a very, very successful basketball team, the coach who was very, very famous, taught them all how to meditate. And they won several championships. So there is benefit to that. But, that what you noticed about how to let go, that's what brings joy. In other words, if you hit the ball and it went out of bounds, whether we're talking about golf or volleyball, there's a tension that comes because there's an attachment to a particular expectation about your performance. It just didn't work, right? So when you can use the breath, instead of that storyline building, and you keep getting more and more wrapped around a failure, it doesn't get better. But when you practice noticing and letting go, letting go, letting go, then the energy that would otherwise be bound up in doubt and self-recrimination is freed up to get back in the game, so to speak. Right? So that's part of it. That can bring a renewed interest in playing the game, which is what joy is, but also gratitude. Not so much because you screwed up the shot, but more because you can bring your balance back. Be grateful for that. That makes sense?
And like that gratitude aspect is interesting to me because I guess it's linked to the joy as well, that you have self-compassion and you have self-love, that you don't get wrapped up in that bad shot, you know, that you know you're more than a bad shot. You're this awareness, this presence, or this dimension that I think you mentioned it, like eternal. You used a word, but it makes sense to me. Yes.
Yeah, internal locus of control.
Yeah. Yeah, and it and then it brings joy. Like, and I don't know about the joy if that's an ego joy, like I won the point or I hit a good shot, or gratifying joy that, you know, because it's sports and I've heard sports is ego, meaning why do people play sports? I've heard that they say that because to satisfy your ego, but I don't know if I totally agree with that. Like, you can be mindful and you can be in your being playing sports. And then it's not about your ego at that point. It's about being in the zone. And I guess whether you win or lose, I mean, if you win, then it feeds your ego, but I don't know.
Well,
Those are my thoughts.
let me talk a little bit about ego. We tend to regard ego as a noun. My ego. Ego is a process. We're all being stimulated through the sense doors all the time. I mentioned these different channels, right? There's a channel for auditory processing, a channel for visual processing, a channel for somatic processing, you know, so forth and so on, what are called the sense doors. So we have to be aware of just one part of it. Otherwise, we'd be overwhelmed and dysfunctional. We couldn't operate if we had to attend to all the signals that are coming in from the world. The ego is what decides which part of that stimulus to focus in on. That's all it is. Now, when we're attached to a particular view of ourselves, a particular identity, then what happens is that stuckness creates tension. And that tension would, you know, spoil your, ruin your game, so to speak. And when we notice that tension, that is attached to the notion of I'm either a winner or a loser, then that creates the problem. It's either ego gratification or ego defense. So we learn how to recognize that. That's what mindfulness is about, an investigation of mental phenomena, the storyline. We see it, we see the contraction. We're aware of the tension in the body, the breath. The thought pattern becomes more rigid, more stuck. Damn, why did I miss that shot? You know, instead, it's just like, whoops, that didn't go right. Back to the game. Right? So that's what the whole notion of ego is about, is self-identity. And what will the others think of me? What we're trying to do with this practice is recognize that the choices that we make that are either ego gratifying or ego defensive cause problems. But when we take the next shot because it feels good to swing the club or smack the ball, and we get joy out of that, that's good. But if the only way we can get joy is if we always win, or we never make a mistake. That's problematic, right?
Yeah, and that's so true, like ego gratifying or ego defense. And I've always heard, you know, you're the first person who I've heard explain the ego this way, that It's a contraction of your senses, essentially, to focus on only one part of the sensory input or the channel. Because they always say ego is a false self, or ego is the shell that protects the inner child. And to me, I'm like, okay, then I want to communicate, my adult self wants to communicate with my inner child, because I think if anybody improves that relationship between their adult self and inner child, they start becoming more and more conscious, in my opinion. And this shell around the inner child is protecting the inner child, that, you know, don't listen to that adult self. He doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know what he's talking about. You're right. I'll protect you. I'm on your side. And so I feel like it's like this negative thing that I want to crack, so that I can communicate with my inner child.
The idea is to not try to crack it. That just creates more argument between the inner child and the inner parent. Okay. The idea is to recognize that it's just a story and let it go. Tune into a different channel, a channel that's more present, and that's not, the energy is not being all bound up in the argument. And more creativity happens. That's one of the things that's really important to understand. The quieter the mind is, the more options we have for making more wholesome choices. That's why it's so valuable to cultivate the stability of mindfulness of breathing practice. You know, be interested in what's happening with the breath. Generate interest. There's a connection of neurons in the brain called the salience network, and its function is to be alert to novelty. I kind of alluded to that earlier. And the salience network basically starts to figure out friend or foe, food or poison, right? And start to build a case one way or the other. With mindfulness, we can be aware of how that process starts to build momentum. And because we're training to let go, to notice and let go, there's more space around that. There's less reactivity to whatever that tension, that tense story is. And that quieter flow allows for more creativity to operate, particularly as we recognize the benefits of right speech, right action, and right livelihood, you know, the ethical part of this practice. Good question, Damar. Thank you.
Yeah, thank
Other
you.
questions or comments? Sherry?
Peter. I had a lot of thoughts about it's interesting to contemplate all the different ways of being grateful. I've found that I've had a few things happening where I've injured myself, bumping into something or falling or this or that. And I have become, you know, it's interesting. Last night I bumped into something and I bleed very easily if it's a sharp, you know, something or another. And I've become extremely grateful for my body's capacity to heal because I have noticed that there may be an initial pain, but I've noticed that my attention focuses on that exact places where I may have hurt myself. And the pain tends to go away, but my attention is more about the miraculous ability of, and I consider it miraculous because you know, a lot of people when they fall or when they hurt themselves, it can be a fracture or, you know, something pretty difficult to heal. But I have, and I'm afraid to say it, I've been very fortunate that even with a nice little fall, either off my bike or somewhere, you know, it seems to be positive in my ability to get over it.
Yeah, one of the things that's important to understand about joy as a result of being mindful and investigating and letting go is that capacity to be engaged and interested in a buoyant way even applies when there are challenges, when we've been hurt or we've suffered a loss, that somehow or other, it's interesting. Not that I would say, oh, you know, I'm going to go smack my thumb so that I can feel
yeah,
it's
exactly.
More lines of when it does happen, isn't this interesting? I told this story before. When I was on a retreat in this building years ago, at the end of the retreat, I had an episode of kidney stones, which I have had several times in my life. And I was laying there, very mindful and noticing what was going on, realizing this is a kidney stone. And what came to mind is, isn't this interesting? My body was wriggling around, obviously reacting to this pain, and my mind was very calm and curious. Look what happens in this body with a kidney stone. Isn't that interesting? What's going to happen next? How is this going to resolve itself? With a quality of relaxed, interested curiosity. So that's the thing about joy, is that it can be applied even in difficult situations beneficially. And I'm grateful for that. Right?
Yeah, that's exactly very similar to what I'm saying as well. It is very much liberal. I don't know how to describe it, but I think we're both taking a pretty good crack at it.
Yep, sounds like it. You and I have been working with this for a long time, haven't we?
Well, yeah, and I'm just going to say that it's really easy as I age to worry about future things that might happen, and I can't really think. I just don't go there, and this gives me a certain degree of confidence that whatever happens, I can put it in a context where it's not going to it's just not going to create a mind trap of that nature.
Yes. Other questions or comments?
I have a comment. The underlying thing in all this joy and gratitude is transcending ego.
Yes.
Get ourselves out of you know, whatever is happening. And because when we are in there, our mind is conjuring up stories and it's not present. And that's what meditation does, is develop a practice of being present. And in presence, I am out of a scheme. I'm with what is. I don't have story at that time. You know, it happens for very brief moments, but I'm out of the picture. A few times you have said, let it go. I would say let it be.
That too.
You know, because whatever is happening is happening. You know, I've mentioned this before. And I'm an illusion, you know. I say I'm doing things, but things are happening. So, but I don't live like that. But I wish I would. Things are just happening. And to think of that about myself and everybody else is very, very comforting, you know.
Yeah, that's the pro-social part of it. The more we realize that we're all in this together, I feel grateful because when I say we're all in this together, the Sangha, people who are on this path, that we're all interested in how to make best use of our lives in this way. And that brings a lot of gratitude.
I would say even those who are not on this path, you know, they are on different paths, you know.
Yeah, yeah. What I mean, the path toward a better life, not necessarily, I'm using the terminology that's familiar to Buddhism, but path could be just my neighbor who's just been kind.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know. We live on a miraculous planet. It's amazing what goes on.
That's
my practice. That's, the more miraculous life is for me.
Yeah, and that miracle, I'm glad you brought that up. When I am out of it, I'm more present, and I'm closer to all the miracle that's going on all the time, and I can appreciate it, and that's what brings the joy, the miraculous things that are going on. That's what brings me joy.
No. Yes, yes. So we'll have time for Steve Perlman, and then we'll wrap it up for the night.
Well, I certainly can't think my way into joy. The joy seems to come just from experiencing something, like you say, with interest, and with the interest, the noise of the mind just goes away, because you know you're more focused on just whatever it is that you're experiencing. And when I go out into nature, that seems to be a really a nice place to experience something, rather than just being in a climate controlled box. And right now, I mean, I'm down in Boca Raton, and we have an area of the Everglades called Loxahatchee. And right now we have maybe they're starlings, but just in the half hour before sunset, these birds are just so noisy in the trees. And then all of a sudden, they'll all just fly together. And it could be hundreds at the same time. And I find it that if I just listen for them, I know when they're coming, and they come in waves. You know, the no self side just, you know, it takes over with the experience that you know, you're no longer really thinking, but just experiencing these guys coming. You can hear them coming, and then all of a sudden they're just flying over you, and wave after wave of that right now. It's just really interesting. And, you know, I know it's all part of what we study as Indra's net, just our connection to everything.
Right. But see, what makes Indra's net so interesting is that part of it is joy. It's still part of the entanglement of having a self. But the characteristics of joy are liberating. They motivate, they incline one's intention toward, you know, more spiritual development. At least that's my experience.
So, and it is a struggle to, you know, just experience, to just experience and experience, because, you know, so much of my time, I just know it's just being caught, like you say, in story, caught in thought, and I'm not experiencing anything at that point. I'm just detached from it.
Right. That's one of the characteristics of joy, and that quality of present moment awareness that approaches being non-dual. You know, there's no felt need to make a separation between the sound of the birds and the experience of it. And part of what makes that possible is joy, that sense of exuberant interest. So we're actually running over our time. So we need to put a wrap on it for tonight. The topic for next week is actually whatever you all bring to the meeting. It's a kind of an open questions, Dharma questions meeting. I'll be facilitating that. So, as is our custom, let's sit together briefly at the end of the meeting. Thank you for your practice. I wish you well, and I hope that we all enjoy a safe and happy Thanksgiving holiday.